So far, we've looked extensively at the extreme demands we can place upon our hearts, and we've heard how technology is helping us to stay healthier for longer. But what we've not yet discussed is perhaps the most powerful and effective therapy of all, exercise. Back to Sanjay Sharma.
People who exercise are less likely to be obese, less likely to have diabetes. They're more likely to have a good blood pressure and lipid profile. And by controlling all of these acquired risk factors for atherosclerosis, people who exercise moderately reduce the risk of an adverse event from a coronary event by about 50% when they hit their fifth and sixth decade. They live around 3 to 7 years longer than people who don't exercise. They are less likely to get cancer of the prostate, the breast, the uterus, and the colon, less likely to be depressed, and less likely to develop dementia. And therefore, if you were going to bottle exercise into some sort of pharmacological pill, it would be considered as the miracle pill, something that is free of charge, that can be taken at any time, that's devoid of side effects, that will reduce consultations with the general practitioner, outpatient clinics, and reduce bed occupancy. And therefore, I believe that every physician in this country should be performing, or certainly prescribing, shall I say, some form of exercise to every single patient.
It's quite challenging, though. When someone says you should take more exercise, it's quite hard to quantify what constitutes therapy for that particular person, because it's clear that taking some exercise, from what you're saying, some exercise has got to be better than no exercise. But is a brisk walk as good as going jogging?
A good point. Again, our chief medical officer recommends that we perform 30 minutes of moderate exercise 5 times a week. Now, that's a brisk walk or a gentle jog at a 15-minute mile pace. Clearly, that data bears fruit, and that has been shown. But there is also data that if you do a little bit less than that, that you will do better than someone who does nothing. But the question is, what is the actual ideal dose to prevent things like diabetes and heart attacks and stroke? Now, some of the studies that have been published, these are large meta-analyses, you know, involving thousands and thousands of patients, have shown that to get the best benefit, you probably have to do 5 times the current recommended limit. Now, clearly not everybody can do that. We've got people who've got musculoskeletal problems, problems with their hearts and their lungs, that they're just not capable of doing that sort of exercise. So the good news for those individuals is that some exercise is certainly better than none. But for those individuals who are able and can exercise, I do not think that just 30 minutes 5 times a week is enough. They should be trying to do a little bit more than that.
And there's no risk if a person does take up exercise, they're not putting themselves at increased risk through exercising? Because there are some people who say, oh, don't overdo it. You don't want to give yourself a heart attack through sudden, unaccustomed, severe exercise.
Another good point. There is one thing being an accustomed exerciser, someone who's actually run most of their lives or jogged most of their lives or been a very active individual. And there's another thing where someone has actually looked in the mirror in their fifth decade and noticed that their belly is bulging over their belt and decides, oh my God, I need to go to the gym and I am going to start on day one and go on the treadmill and run at an eight-minute mile pace. I don't think that's a very good idea. I think in those people, they need to ask themselves 3 questions. The first question is, do I experience chest pain? Am I more breathless than my peers when I walk with them? Have I got a family history of premature cardiovascular disease? And do I have obvious risk factors? Am I a smoker? Have I got high blood pressure? Am I taking tablets for hypercholesterolemia? I think if you're doing all of that, then I would certainly exercise cautiously, gently, to the point that you can hold a conversation but are unable to sing. That would be a good point. And I think if you're going to plan to do any more than that, I do believe that it's probably worth seeing a specialist to make sure that it's safe to do so.
But you can't use not being able to sing in the first place as a valid excuse for not exercising. Thanks to Sanjay Sharma, and thanks to all our other guests this week, Amanda Varnava, Rick Steeds, Claire Ward-Jones, Gaz Kennedy, Nick Green, Gareth Wills, Craig Franklin, Ben Levine, and Michelle Williams.